You've asked me to speak today about how queer thinking has informed my resources for therapists more widely, so not just psychoanalysts, but I've written for counsellors and therapists in general on the topic of gender, sexual and relationship diversity. There's a book, Sexuality and Gender for Mental Health Professionals, that I wrote some years back, and then more recently this document. So this is a free resource that the BACP asked me to write. So this is available on the BACP website for free download if you're interested, gender, sexual and relationship diversity. And as Eve was saying, I've also written a book about queer theory, which is a really basic 101 introduction for those who don't know anything about it. It just gives you a bit of an invitation to it, really. It certainly doesn't cover it in anything like the depth necessary, but it gives you a sense of some queer thinking and some of the queer thinkers who I find the most exciting. So how, in a way, I'm asking, how did this influence this then? There's a bit of history to this resource for the BACP. So the background is that the BACP team, they're trying to come up with a range of resources, as I understand it, to tackle gender, sexuality, race, class, disability, other intersections. And they had got a team trying to do something around LGBT, I guess, and they'd come up with a resource, which they passed by Dominic Davis, the head of Pink Therapy, and I also got to see a copy. And we were just kind of troubled by it, because it sort of went... It had a section on gender that was about pretty much heterosexual, cisgender men and women and their issues. Then it had a section on LGB, lesbian, gay, bisexual people. And then it had a section on transgender people. And this is just not where we would have started, you know. So what we had to say to them is like, well, you know, you're kind of asking, could we give you some advice to make this better? But I'm saying we wouldn't have started here. We wouldn't have divided it in this way. And that's where we get to queer theory, really, because we felt that it was dividing it in a very sort of, here's the normative and here's the non-normative. And as we were saying yesterday, that kind of binary, normal, abnormal thinking is the very thing that queer theory challenges the whole way through. So they got back to me and said, well, you write us one. And then that's where I had to do some pretty hard thinking about how would I write such a resource then? If I wouldn't write it like that, how would I do it? So the starting point for my resource was, how does our current culture and often our therapeutic institutions understand gender, sexuality and relationships? And that is according to a sort of set of interlinked binaries. So gender is seen as you're a man or you're a woman. Sexuality, you're attracted to the opposite gender. Everything should be in scare quotes, like the entire thing I'm saying, so I'm not going to do that matter. But sexuality should be attracted to either the opposite gender or the same gender. And relationships, the idea that it's that the natural and normal expression of that gender and sexuality would be in a monogamous long-term couple relationship, right? That would be the general understanding or assumption, and that you can see through that how our understandings of gender, sexuality and relationships are all intertwined. And that's why we always call it, Dominic Davis and I anyway, gender, sexual and relationship diversity, with the relationship part in there too, because that often gets missed out. We often just think about gender and sexuality, but we would suggest that you'd need to have relationship structure or style in there as well. And that all these rest on hierarchical binaries where, as we've talked about already this morning, where the masculine is privileged over the feminine, the straight over the gay, and the monogamous over the non-monogamous. For me, in the document, it's about not just exploring how that affects marginalised groups who are in those, you know, less privileged sides of those binaries, but it's also about considering how it affects those who are on the privileged side of those binaries. Because my view, certainly working in sex and relationship therapy, is that these kind of assumptions have a very negative effect also on people who are trying to have heterosexual monogamous relationships, or people who are trying to fit in a very narrow kind of cisgender understanding of what it means to be masculine or what it means to be feminine. That's not good for anyone. When that kind of rigid understanding is followed. So in the documents, it goes on to explore what's it like for those who are trying to fit on the privileged side of one or all of those binaries. What's it like for those who are on the other side? And also, what's it like for those who don't fit the binaries? Bisexual people, queer people, non-binary people, people in different relationship structures that maybe fall between monogamy and non-monogamy or outside. And also, what's it like for people who are outside those binary systems entirely, for agender people, asexual people, and aromantic people? So it kind of takes us to some different areas that don't get thought about very much. So yeah, really, it's putting forward an alternative to the normal slash abnormal binary model, and moving to one of gender, sexual, and relationship diversity, which understands that we're all diverse. And I think that's really a theme that came up a lot this morning. So perhaps I'm preaching to people who already accept this here. And if you look at historical and cultural variation on understandings of gender, sexuality, and relationships, you find a very wide diversity across time and space of doing these things. So we have to move away from that kind of ethnocentric view that our particular understanding of gender, sexuality, and relationships is the right one, or the normal one, or the natural one. And similarly with research, people were touching on this morning the proliferation of different identity terms around gender, sexuality, and indeed the same things happen in relationship, particularly about with young people. The research that's kind of being done now on people's experience is that, you know, we need to move away from this majority-minority model, because the percentage of people who have kinky fantasies, the percentage of people who have some kind of non-monogamous relationship, whether that be secret or open, the percentage of people who have attraction to more than one gender or experience themselves as more than one gender, we're actually talking in the kind of a third of people, you know, in a lot of cases, high percentages, not the kind of 1 or 2% or even the 10 or 15%, but we're talking about large numbers of people. So yeah, that's mostly what I wanted to say. I guess the why it feels really urgent to me is the research that's out there suggests that for those who are in those more marginalized positions in relation to those cultural understandings of gender, sexuality, and relationships are having awful experiences in therapy. The research bears that out, and my experience as a therapist working with mostly GSRD marginalised folks bears it out as well. Most of them have been to a therapist in the past who has explicitly pathologised them, who has tried to change their sexuality or their gender or their relationship structure. And it's, you know, with the memorandum of understanding, it's getting better for gay people. But bisexual people, most of them still tell me stories about therapists who've thought that they should pick a side, basically. Kinky people, most have, you know, if they've had more than one therapist, they've had an experience with someone trying to get rid of their kinky fantasies or desires. Non-monogamous people mostly have experience of therapists who think they should be monogamous. Sex workers and asexual people are probably the worst. You know, I really haven't come across an asexual person or a sex worker who hasn't had a really awful experience of a pathologizing therapist trying to change either their desires or their practices. So I think that's why it feels really urgent to me that we have to stop perpetuating the societal damage that's being done to clients and perpetuating these cultural assumptions, which are just wrong-headed. And that's what I get from queer theory, is a different way of thinking about gender, sexuality, and relationships that has space for that diversity. But it sounds like, from what people have been saying, that psychoanalysis also has that space. So I guess my call to you would be to keep talking about how that space can open up in your work with patients/clients. Thank you very much.